Well, hi again, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of Schwartz on Sports here at New York Sports Day. I'm Peter Schwartz. Thanks for joining us on this edition of the podcast. The 2020-21 NHL season will begin on January 13th. For the Islanders, it begins on January 14th, and for the Islanders, training camp is set to begin at the Northwell Health Ice Center at Eisenhower Park on Long Island on Sunday. And online with us to talk about the upcoming season, we'll even take a look back at the Islanders' run to the Eastern Conference Final this past season as the Islanders' radio analyst on their radio broadcast, Greg Picker. Greg, Peter Schwartz, how are you?
Peter, thanks for having me on. Great to be here.
It's great to have you, and thank you for doing it. And it's very exciting with the season just a couple of weeks away from getting underway, and training camp's going to start on Sunday. But before we look forward, I want to ask you, because we haven't spoken in a while, and I just wanted to go back to what was an unbelievable and memorable summer and into fall for the Islanders organization and their fans. And obviously, it's been a tough year with COVID and seeing the season, you know, shut down in March. But when play resumed in the bubble, man, did the Islanders have some kind of enjoyable summer for everybody around the team. Your thoughts on everything that transpired over the summer and watching this team get to within 6 wins of winning a Stanley Cup?
Yeah, it's been such a tough year for everybody in 2020, but for those of us who are involved with the Islanders or Islander fans, it was a nice couple of months to have some enjoyment. Sure, we wish every single one of us, whether it was a fan or guys like me and Chris King, who would be there broadcasting games, we wish we were able to see this in person. Team hasn't made it to the conference final since 1993, and they get there this year, and we're sitting in a studio on the beautiful campus of Hofstra University, watching on the monitor, but we had a blast. I mean, the way that they went on this run, they won 3 playoff series, which hasn't happened, of course, since 1984 when they went to the Stanley Cup final, but right. This was certainly a unique year in which you had to win an extra preliminary round just to even get into the round of 16, if you will. So to see the way the team was playing, and they played such Barry Trotz lockdown style. There were how many games, especially in the first 2 rounds, and even in that Flyers series, I think it may have happened once as well, where they limited the opponent to no shots or one shot on goal over a 12-minute stretch in the third period, up by a goal or two. It was...
Yeah, Greg, wasn't it a game against the Capitals where there was the Islanders had the lead in the third period, and I think the puck was in. I think it was against the Capitals where they had like the puck down in the Washington end for at least 3 or 4 minutes, and that really salted the game away.
And that, I think, was the situation when Cal Clutterbuck scored the goal. That was basically the capper on the game, where it was a clinic, an absolute clinic. It looked like an NHL team against an AHL team on that type of shift that turned into a goal. And it was just a testament to the system of this team being bigger than the sum of its parts, can all come together. Unfortunately, just ran into essentially a superpower in the Tampa Bay Lightning. The travel schedule didn't help. The fact that the Islanders had to go 7 games in the second round, technically, which was the third round this year,
right,
and the Lightning were sitting there having only played 5 games, had an extra day to recover from the trip out west from Toronto to Edmonton, but it was just fun, you know. Kinger and I had a blast. If some people were able to see those videos of us in the studio on a couple of big moments, whether it was the last minute of regulation in Game 7 against the Flyers, the countdown to make it to the conference final, and then one that both Kinger and I loved was the Jordan Eberle Game 5 overtime winner, where you could just see our raw emotion and what this team means to us.
Yeah, there's a couple of holes in the roof in our house from heads going through it after that.
Yeah, no. This is still standing somehow after our reaction.
You know, I wanted to ask you about that because, obviously, listen, in my over 30 years of broadcasting, and you know, we go back to, you know, the days where I was doing play-by-play for the Dragons Arena football team, and you wind up in situations where you're broadcasting a game from behind the end zone, or you're behind the goal, or you're all the way up on top of an arena. You know, there's so many things sometimes where a broadcaster has to be able to get through some adversity of their own. But this was so different for you and Chris and a lot of the other broadcasters, calling games from a studio off of a monitor, And I'm just wondering what it was like for you. And we saw some behind the scenes pictures and stories about it online. But just, you know, for our audience here, what was it like calling games off a monitor, and how challenging was it for you?
One thing that helped tremendously was that the NHL was able to get the audio from the ice, so the natural sounds of the sticks and puck bouncing off the boards and all that directly into our headset. So it sounded as if we were there in our headset, and that allowed us to really feel like we were there in a way and get those emotions, because it felt like we were in the ring whenever, mm-hmm. you know, a goal was scored and whatnot, and we had to get ourselves amped up because we naturally were from big moments.
Right.
And of course, the playoffs. Some of the challenges, certainly a lot of penalties. I mean, there were times where, because we're relying on those cameras, we can't see what's going on behind the play. So
you're watching the same angle that, you know, anybody would have been watching in their living room. You had the same angle that everybody else did.
Yes, we had the option to go to what was basically an overhead feed, and we tried it a couple times early on, but we had these two monitors, and it was really difficult to sync the two monitors together
mm-hmm.
when we weren't using the main feed. So we tried that once late in a game when there was a potential empty net situation to see when the goaltender was going to be pulled, and it just was so difficult. So we kind of scrapped that early on and
yeah.
said, you know what, there are going to be a couple of bumps here when it comes to a puck out of the glass, puck over the glass penalty. I remember we were super confused on, because we never got the indication it went over, so we were trying to figure out what the infraction was, and then eventually they finally showed on the lower third, okay, delay of game, puck over the glass, and
right.
it made a lot more sense. And there were a couple times with an empty net that we did not know for sure that the net was empty. We were kind of waiting for a sixth attacker to come in, and then we got the indication, okay, net's empty.
So right.
there were a couple things that early on we kind of had to figure out, and towards the end, it was a lot more natural. It's never going to be perfect when you're watching off a monitor and not
right.
in an actual rink, but you know what? We were able to get the job done, and more importantly, it was because the Islanders got the job done when those
yeah,
series.
They,
it made our jobs a lot easier
yeah.
when things are going so well.
Yeah, well, of course, certainly a lot more enjoyable when a team is going on a run, and they're part of the NHL's Final Four. We're talking to Islanders radio analyst Greg Picker here on Schwartz on Sports at New York Sports Day as the Islanders get set to open up training camp on Sunday and begin the 2020-21 season on January 14th. So let's move ahead to what's about to start, and that is a very highly anticipated season for the Islanders coming off of what they did in the bubble. In terms of bridging the gap for those final six wins that would bring the Islanders their fifth Stanley Cup, you know, how do you look at this makeup of this team? Obviously, there were some minor changes, and as we tape this interview on Wednesday morning, there still could be some other roster moves. Matt Barzal is a restricted free agent. We expect him to get signed. But this team's going to look very much like it looked at the end of last season. What are your thoughts and expectations heading into training camp?
Right when the season ended, that essentially was Lou Lamoriello's goal. He said that he wanted to bring back as much of this team as possible. It was a squad that got, like you said, within 6 wins of a Stanley Cup. And outside of really Devon Taves, who is a casualty, it's not a player that the Islanders wanted to give up, but in this flat cap world, he was a restricted free agent. Colorado had room for him, who was able to get a couple of second-round picks for the talented young defenseman, so he won't be back. And Johnny Boychuk, unfortunately, that eye injury he suffered towards mm-hmm. the end of the regular season ends up being essentially a career ender for him. So we wish our best to Johnny. He was such a huge figure for the team on, and really just as importantly, off the ice, as the Islanders really got back to respectability and then some after he was acquired to begin that 2014-15 season. Looks like Derek Brassard will not be back, as he had the 1 year stint and really excelled once he ended up being a winger, especially JG Pageau. They played a lot together throughout the entire postseason. But outside of that, it looks like the bulk of the squad will be back. They're obviously, as you mentioned, Matt Barzal is not officially signed yet. Some of the other names that were on the Islanders this past year were unrestricted free agents, have not signed yet anywhere else. It does appear, according to reports, that they will likely be back in the blue and orange, guys like Matt Martin and Andy Green. So for the most part, it will be a similar squad that got all the way to Game 6 of the conference final. Noah Dobson, though, will be somebody that will absolutely have to have a bigger role. We talked about Taves leaving. We talked about Boychuk not being here. So Noah Dobson can play about half the games in the regular season. They got a little taste of playoff action right at the end. You expect him to be an everyday type of player. And if he can, he's not necessarily going to be looked on as being a top four type of guy immediately. Right. But if he can grow into a top four role on the blue line, then this will absolutely be a net positive for the Islanders and could help big time in this 56-game regular season upcoming.
There's no question it's exciting to see a guy like Noah Dobson be able to get, you know, indoctrinated into the lineup, because I think we saw, you know, glimpses of what, you know, his upside is going to be. And obviously, you know, where he was drafted, you know, the upside is expected to be pretty high. But up front, as of right now, the Islanders have been unable to make any, you know, major acquisitions. You know, Mike Hoffman was a guy that a lot of people looked at as a nice fit for the Islanders. And as of right now, he's on a PTO with Minnesota, so it doesn't look like anything's going to happen there. So you would think that perhaps the Islanders might look in-house to get a little bit more scoring. Where do you think, you know, guys like Oliver Wahlstrom, who got a cup of coffee in the NHL, you know, last season a little bit, and also Kiefer Bellows, a guy who came up and scored a couple of goals. Do you see those two guys making a push at training camp to get a roster spot?
Without a doubt. And Bellows showed that scoring touch even with his cup of coffee with the Islanders. He had that two-goal game. Oliver Wahlstrom had a brief run, didn't necessarily pile up the points, but did excel at the American Hockey League level last year with the Bridgeport Sound Tigers. And you have to expect Michael Dal Colton to hopefully take another step up, as he could be a third-line winger for the Islanders. He played the bulk of the season last year, 53 regular season games, as the Islanders played just shy of 70 before the NHL went on pause. So he would like to be an everyday player for this squad this upcoming season, and one, two, or maybe all three of those names that we just mentioned could be a big part of the team going forward this year, especially if they want to be able to excel in have a third line, which that was kind of a dark spot, if you will, for the Islanders until the acquisition of J.G. Pageau. They just could not find that center on the third line. Once Pageau came in, that stabilized the third line, and it will allow the wingers to feel more comfortable with a guy who is one of the best third-line centers in the National Hockey League. Most teams, he would be a second-line center.
Yeah, I would love to see, if the Islanders were somehow able to get a premier top-line scorer, they could drop Anders Lee. And I don't look at it as a demotion, but if you were able to move Anders Lee down to the third line, I think that would lengthen the lineup so much if they were able to do that. And it really just happens with one player. And obviously it's tough to do, as you said, with the flat cap era. But if the Islanders were able to acquire that one premier scorer, just think about how that lineup all of a sudden changes dramatically.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. We're coming up pretty quickly to training camp here. But you never know what Lou Lamoriello can have up his sleeve.
No question about it. A few more minutes with Greg Picker, the Islanders radio analyst, as we get set for Islanders training camp starting on Sunday. 56-game regular season. Everything is within a revamped division, the Eastern Division. It's a lot of Islanders-Rangers, a lot of Islanders-Devils, a lot of geographic rivals, eight times during the season against each of these teams. Your thoughts on how different it's going to be this year, not being in your traditional Metropolitan Division, and the other divisions obviously are going to be different too. But what are your thoughts on 56 games all within the division?
Yeah, the only disappointment is that we won't have fans in the building for Islanders, Rangers, Islanders, Devils, these Islanders, Penguins games, Bruins, etc. The teams that are the Islanders' biggest rivals, the Flyers, of course, as well, in the mix there in this new East Division that comprises of the old Atlantic Division that we had for so many years. Those five teams, plus the Capitals, the Bruins, and the Sabres as well. But one thing that I wonder about is, there will be four teams from each division, of course, that make the postseason, and then you're essentially paying from those four to get to the conference final. Think about how much of an advantage the team from the East might have once they get to, it's not going to be a conference final this year, but a semifinal, once there are only four teams remaining, because of the limited travel. I mean, the farthest trip is Boston to Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you have the Canadian division, the North division. You have to go from Montreal out to Vancouver for nine games a year between the two of those teams.
Yeah.
It's remarkable how little travel the teams in the East will have compared to every other division, and that could be a big factor come playoff time when fatigue is, of course, huge and you need your depth to come up big. Whatever team comes out of the East, I think we'll have a huge advantage once you get to that Final Four.
You know, Greg, you mentioned, no fans in the building, and obviously it's sad that at least for the beginning of the season, that's clearly not going to happen. There's not going to be fans in the building, although I'm sure there'll be some, markets around the country that have already relaxed, restrictions. They'll probably have some limited number of people. I think Arizona's one team that has already said they're going to have some fans. To me, obviously everything depends on where this coronavirus is, in the springtime and how quickly the vaccine can get rolled out. But just I keep thinking about how sad it would actually be for Islander fans to not be able to say at least one more time goodbye to the Nassau Coliseum, because obviously a year from now the Islanders will be playing in their brand new home at Belmont Park at UBS Arena. I just hope, and I'm sure you feel the same way, being involved with this team and rooting for this team, for such a long time like I have, it would really be nice, and hopefully this could happen by the end of the season, for fans to be able to come and really say goodbye to the Coliseum.
It would be nice, without a doubt. Of course, just 5 years ago, we did go through what we thought was the goodbye to Nassau Veterans Memorial Coliseum. So if it does play out that we won't be able to have fans in the building this season, at least we can look back at that and say we did have that emotional goodbye. And although kind of like, let's say, a star player that has their career ended by an injury unexpectedly, they don't get that goodbye that they were expecting to have in a farewell season. Maybe this is the same type of thing. There are the parallels in that regard, that this does sometimes happen in sports, and usually not to an arena or a building or a stadium, any type of venue. But at least we did have that 2014-15 season, which, although the postseason didn't go as long as we had hoped, was one of the most memorable regular seasons of this team in the last 2 to 3 decades.
And as we look forward to, and I will close on this, I know you and Chris King had a chance to tour UBS Arena. I'm anxiously awaiting my opportunity to do that too, and I obviously driven past it a few times and watched all the pictures and the videos on online. This is going to be so great for the franchise to finally, after all of the nonsense over the years of trying to get the Coliseum renovated appropriately or build a new arena right next to it, the fact that this is actually happening to me is just amazing. And I think for a lot of people it's emotional to see the building of this new arena and new home for the Islanders that's going to be so modern and be so helpful for the organization. And it's really not far away. I mean, if there's no fans in the building this year, you just hope we can get to the point where opening night, the fall of 2021, that 18,000 people can be at UBS Arena for the opener there. And I know you're looking forward to that.
Without a doubt. And as you mentioned, Kinger and I did get the chance to take a tour a couple of weeks ago, and one thing that really stands out is how low the roof will be. It will feel like the Coliseum in that regard, which already had the lowest roof in the National Hockey League of the remaining venues. You look at some of the other buildings that have been constructed over the last decade plus, and it's usually just bigger and bigger and bigger, and it takes away from the atmosphere. Yeah, you get to pack in more fans, but 19,000 fans in a cavernous building will not be nearly as loud as 17,500 Islander fans in UBS Arena, especially with the way the construction is of that low roof. So I am very much looking forward to that. There will not be a single bad seat in the house, and there are also some other features. That safe standing section, which has really sprung up in European soccer stadiums, this will be the first time in the North American professional arena you'll have a safe standing section, and that will only make the fans standing there even louder. It's a lot easier to cheer when you're up on your feet than it is when you're sitting down for an entire game.
Yeah, it's going to be true. Did you get a chance to see where you and Chris are going to be calling the games from? Did they take you up there?
No, we didn't get up to the highest level. We got to look at it, so we were able to kind of picture where it will be, but we didn't get up to the highest level of the building. And even looking though up there, it is so low, so low compared to pretty much every other new building around the league.
Hey, Greg, I can't thank you enough for a few minutes. It's exciting to get the new season started. Looking forward to seeing you and Kinger and everybody with the Islanders at the rink, starting Sunday for training camp, and obviously looking forward to the start of the season. Thanks for joining me, and good luck this season.
Thanks, Peter, and love joining any sort of podcast that has a New York Dragons reference.
Well, let me quickly before we wrap it up, let me just say, and your dad retired from the Bridgeport Sound Tigers not long ago, and obviously was a longtime executive for the Islanders. And listen, I don't have to tell you this. You know how much your dad meant to me during those 8 years with the Dragons when I was their radio announcer. And those were just such great times. And I tell people all the time, the best job I've ever had in sports was the 8 years that I called Dragons games, because it was so much fun. You were at all the games. You know what it was like. It was such a family. The whole arena football scene was like that. And I miss it. I mean, the paycheck was one thing, but I just miss everybody that I got to meet along those 8 years, and it was so much fun.
Same here. I mean, that league had that run during, from probably 2003 to 2008, where it was right there. It was on NBC and everything, and it was really making headway. Unfortunately, the league didn't have that staying power, but those Dragons games were fun.
Yeah, they were a lot of fun. And regards to your dad and your entire family, again, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Peter. Same to you.
Greg Picker, the Islanders radio analyst, as we get set for training camp on Sunday and the Islanders season opener on January 14th. I'm Peter Schwartz. Thanks for listening to this edition of Schwartz on Sports here at New York Sports Day. We'll catch you again next time. Happy New Year, and stay safe, everyone.